Welcome to Tech Tuesday from All Sides with Amy Juravich, a show where we share stories about science, technology, and the future of our environment. It feels like AI has all of a sudden found its way into every aspect of our technological lives. A new AI model from the creators of ChatGPT promises to integrate itself into more than just our technological lives. Operator from OpenAI can actually do tasks independently and can interact with the internet in ways that AI had not been able to before. Jeffrey Fowler is a San Francisco-based tech columnist for The Washington Post who tried out this new AI, and his column about the experience is entitled, "I Let ChatGPT's New Agent Manage My Life. It spent $31 on a dozen eggs." He joins me now. Jeffrey, welcome back to All Sides.
Thanks for having me. Eggs are expensive right now, but oh boy.
Eggs are expensive, but not $31. So let's start with that. We'll talk about what Operator is, but how did you end up with $31 eggs? What did you ask it to do?
Well, so my job at the Washington Post is to kind of live in a future that hasn't quite yet arrived for everybody else. So I wanted to try out this new AI from OpenAI called Operator. And so it's supposed to be able to do things in the real world. So I thought, well, what's an annoying thing in the real world to do right now? Ah, finding cheap eggs. I think everybody across America is experiencing this. So I literally went to the bot and I said, find me the cheapest eggs I can get nearby. And set it off to go. Now the deal with Operator is, it's supposed to be programmed in a way so that it doesn't actually spend any money or do anything that can't be undone in the real world unless it has your explicit permission. So I didn't really think twice about it. And I watched it go and search some local, the local Safeway store. It searched a couple other places. And then it seemed to be going around in circles. So I kind of left my computer, went off to do other things, stopped looking at it. And then I suddenly looked down at my phone and I had an alert from my American Express card. And it said, somebody has just spent $31 on Instacart. And I was like, wait, what just happened? And what had happened was Operator had decided on its own to authorize itself to buy me some eggs. And the ones that it thought were cheap were $31 worth of eggs on Instacart. It was just a dozen eggs. And they weren't even organic, I know. But it decided that was the right thing to do. So many, many different failures along the way that led me to these very expensive eggs.
Now, did it not understand the word cheap, or did it not understand what you wanted?
I think it didn't understand a number of things. So first of all, it clearly didn't understand cheap because there were definitely cheaper eggs that you could buy online and get delivered in San Francisco, where I'm at. For less than $31. But it also didn't, sort of more fundamentally, it didn't understand the exact thing that I said. I didn't say, go buy me the eggs. I said, find some. Mm. And it sort of leapt to its own conclusions, or was just sort of too eager to please. But that actually is kind of a worrisome thing if we kind of dive into it a little bit, because as we unleash AI onto the internet and out into the broader world, we really want to make sure that it's going to always do exactly what we want it to do, and not, make up its own activities, make up its own needs. And that's what it did in this case. Again, even though it was explicitly trained by OpenAI, they say, and if you can look on the Operator website, they say it will never make a purchase or do another high stakes task without getting your permission first.
So how did it make the purchase? Did you give it access to your Instacart, or was it just on your computer so the login was like auto-saved?
So the way Operator works is it has its own special web browser. And basically the AI is moving around its own mouse cursor in its own web browser. Looks a little bit like a ghost took over your computer, just clicking around on things.
That's kind of like when tech support comes in if you have a tech person
exactly.
coming in and saying, oh, I'll fix your computer. Let me like log in. Okay.
Exactly. So that's what's happening. So it wasn't actually my browser, but I did have to give it my logins to different local online grocery stores. So I had to give it my login to Safeway, give it my login to to Instacart because you need to have an account to be able to search Instacart and to be able to kind of get to the point where you understand all the fees and prices and taxes and everything. So yes, I had done that, and so that was perhaps a mistake on my part, trusting the AI enough to have access to my account, which once you have access, then of course you can make a purchase with it.
Now, you asked Operator to do more than just find you cheap eggs. What's something else you asked it to do?
Yeah, I tried lots of different things. And the eggs thing is a pretty dramatic failure, but there were some things that did well.
Wait, before you wait, did the eggs show up at your house? Did you get them?
I made pancakes with them this morning.
Great. Okay. Well, at least you ended up with them. I was just, I had to finish the story with the eggs. Okay. Now, what else
It's
did you
true.
ask Operator to do?
I will say the guy who delivered them kind of gave me a look, like he knew like that this was maybe not the wisest purchase that had ever been made. What else did I ask it to do? I asked it to do lots of things that are kind of annoying in my life. And let me give you an example of one where it kind of succeeded. Everybody hates having to negotiate their cable and internet bill. Here
Okay.
in California, we have Comcast from Xfinity. And
Okay.
once a year, you have to go through this process of, your contract ran up, and so now they're going to like charge you 50 more bucks a month unless you go in and negotiate with them. I said, I wonder if Operator could do this for me. So again, I put in the prompt, see if you can find me a better deal from Comcast than I currently pay, and I let it log into my Comcast account, and it kind of went off on its own. And a couple minutes later, sure enough, it had found one. It said, "Aha! Here's a deal that's a little bit less." Now, this is where things get a little gray. The deal it had found was a little bit less than what I currently pay, but it actually misread the screen. Like it misread the numbers. The numbers actually had a minus in front of it because they were trying to tell me, oh, it's $13 cheaper. And instead, Operator thought it was only a $13 plan, which would be way too low. So it still got a little confused there. But when I pushed back at it and I said, okay, tell me the final price all added up, it did something that was really cool. It gave me the final price correctly, but then it said, you know what? I've looked in the fine print, and this deal actually isn't a deal in the long run because it's going to run out in a couple of months, and then you'll end up paying more. So I don't think you should take it. And that to me was a real aha moment that, so much about our lives as consumers, our lives on the internet these days has become really that there's a, pardon the term here, there's a term that folks in Silicon Valley use these days. It is enshittified, meaning that there's been so much about it that has been sort of become anti-consumer that you really have to like work very hard to try to get around it. This includes things like privacy policies you don't understand and subscriptions that you can't quit. And if an AI agent can help us get around some of that, can read that fine print, can dig into the details for us, that could be really valuable to us.
Yeah, that's interesting. So it read the fine print for you,
It
which
did.
is something no one ever reads and no one likes. So that's good, right?
I could imagine a world where we have an AI agent whose job it is to read privacy policies for us, which we know nobody ever reads,
Right.
and help us make a quick snap judgment. Should I trust this website? Should I trust this app? Or what should my settings be over here? Now, that will work until we get to the point that the people who make all those hoops we have to jump through on the internet till they figure out how to confuse the AI too, which is totally possible, and then we're back where we started. But at least it's kind of a move in the right direction of letting the bots work for us.
We're talking with Jeffrey Fowler, a San Francisco-based columnist for The Washington Post, who tried out a new AI operator. So the other thing I realized from your story about calling the cable co or talking to the cable company is you didn't actually have to talk to anyone. You didn't have to get sold. You didn't have to spend any time on the website. It did that part for you too.
It was blissful. I didn't have to deal with any of that process. Now, I also did try with a friend. I said to Operator, okay, go in and try to lower her Comcast bill, but do it by negotiating with the live chat agent. And there it did a terrible job because one of the safety mechanisms built into Operator right now is that it won't send any messages, it won't send any emails without you giving it prior permission each time. So every step along the way of the chat, it kept saying, "Do you want me to send this now? Do you want me to send this now?"
Well, that's
And
not
at that
helpful.
point, yeah, then at that point, I might have just done it myself.
So, is operator still just a model? Is this something that that someone who's not a tech writer can use?
Anybody can use it, but it's a pretty expensive right now. So OpenAI calls it kind of an experiment that is open to the public. But to get it, you have to subscribe to the highest tier of ChatGPT, which costs $200 per month. So I don't think it's a thing that most people are going to bring into their lives, but it is a preview of what is coming to our lives very, very soon. OpenAI has already said it is their intention to bring it to people more widely, probably next level to the folks who spend for the ChatGPT Plus subscription, which is, which is $20 a month, and then maybe to everyone after that. And we know other big AI companies have been showing off very similar technologies. Google has a very similar sort of magic mouse moving computer using AI that they've shown off, as does Anthropic. So, everybody in the AI world is talking about these agents as the next big thing, as the thing that's really going to make AI more useful in our lives by taking it beyond just a chat, beyond just, a back and forth with a bot that can write sentences or make pictures.
So, would you ask it to buy eggs again? Would you like? Do you or are you over that experience?
I think that they have not done enough to really put in the guardrails on the system to prevent it from doing things like buying eggs. They say they learned from my experience. They also offered to pay for my eggs, which I declined. The Washington Post can pay for those. But I don't know that they really have figured out how to control it well enough yet. So I would not right now. But it does seem like, with everything I'm hearing and seeing from the AI world, that like we're going to see a lot more of these in our lives. So we'll get to a point where we would all consider it again.
And just before I let you go, I wanted to ask you one question, not related to AI, but sort of everything's related to AI. I saw a video of you in a different piece you did for the Washington Post talking about resetting your Instagram account. Can
Yes.
you tell me, is this a doom scroll reset for me? Will it stop me from doom scrolling?
So this is actually one of the sort of quietly biggest changes to our tech lives has happened in the last month or so. Instagram started talking about this last year, but never really rolled it out. But it is finally out. There is a button inside Instagram you can press that erases everything that it thinks it knows about you and uses to determine what it shows you in that main feed that you get when you open the app, and also what it shows you when you go to that explore page. So these are what Instagram calls recommendations, and these are the things that its AI wants to show you to try to keep you scrolling, keep you doom scrolling. And a lot of people have bad experiences with their Instagram algorithms. Now, some people love it. Some people like can't get enough. Give me more. For example, something that happened to me is I created an account after my son was born, and the algorithm got really dark and started showing me lots of images of children who were ill or injured. So the algorithms, as we know from a lot of reporting and some whistleblowers, are really designed to kind of appeal to shock, to try to get you to keep scrolling and looking. So the ability to press reset has been amazing for me. Like all of a sudden, like I don't have to sort of fear what's coming up next in my feed. Also, frankly, it makes it less addictive, right? It's just sort of like regular stuff that you probably don't care about. So you put your phone down and maybe talk to your family in the real world.
Until it learns about you again, and then you have to in a few months and then reset again, maybe. Is that
Absolutely. I mean, the thing that we that users really want is the ability to say, "Hey, just show me my friends and the people I've asked to follow. Stop feeding me all this stuff that I did not ask for." There is a button you can press in Instagram that will do that, but only for 1 month. It's very, again, user hostile.
Weird.
You have to keep going in and pressing it once a month. I should also point out there's a similar button you can press for TikTok that will reset its For You page. And with a little more effort, you can do the same thing on the recommendations you get with YouTube.
Okay, I will be doing some investigating in my settings after we're off the air, but I want to say thank you to Jeffrey Fowler, tech columnist for the Washington Post. Thank you for joining us.
You bet.
And coming up, we're going to be talking about how video games can become great companions for the elderly. That's when Tech Tuesday continues from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. And you're listening to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Amy Jurevich, a show where we share stories about science, technology, and the future of our environment. When we picture a video game enthusiast, it usually is a young guy hunched over a video game controller. But what if that picture doesn't tell the whole story about who's a part of the gaming universe and what they're gaining from it? Older Ohioans are finding fun, companionship, and health benefits from gaming. Shonda Wingo is the director of the Franklin County Office on Aging, which supports older adults, dependent adults, and their family members. Welcome to All Sides, Shonda.
Thank you. Welcome.
And we also have Dr. Melita Moore, a board-certified physician in four areas, physical medicine and rehabilitation, sports medicine, brain injury medicine, and lifestyle medicine. And her company, Levels Unlock, which promotes and elevates women and people of color, and a program called Level Upland was created. Welcome to All Sides, Dr. Moore.
Thank you for having us.
So WOSU and All Sides embarked on a series called Inside Caregiving, where we're looking at the state of the aging population and how to care for them and their caregivers. And technology plays a role in this conversation when it comes to seniors and their care. Everything from AI to digital literacy to telehealth. But today's topic is actually gaming. So, Shonda, let's start with you. What convinced you that Franklin County's Office of Aging needed to pursue gaming as something for seniors?
Well, it was easy. In Franklin County, the mission, let me start with the mission for the Franklin County Office on Aging. You put it out there eloquently, but I like to simplify it by saying our job is to provide our seniors with the tools and the resources to age in place successfully. So as you mentioned, caregiving, you know, that's just one of those tools. In our caseload, we have about 90% of our seniors, they live alone or they don't have anyone. And gaming is one initiative that allows for that social connectivity. We know that social isolation is one of the risk factors to seniors' health that is overlooked and not commonly discussed. And so we know, partnering with Dr. Moore and Level Upland, that this was a perfect way for our seniors to find a new sense of community, whether it be in the gaming facility itself or gaming from the comfort of their home. There are so many stories that we have through this initiative where seniors were alone. Introducing this new type of technology, they are now able to play with their family members and create a new sense of connection that they didn't have previously. So that's how we got to this. I don't want to take away from Dr. Moore's thunder because she's going to give you all of the medical statistics. That bio is great, but Dr. Moore has so much more to tell you about who she is and what she does.
So Level Upland, tell me what that is.
Yes, so Level Upland is our signature program at Levels Unlocked Enterprises, and we do that in coordination with Healthy Gamer Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit. For our Level Upland program, it spans youth through seniors. However, we are very grateful to have had the opportunity to do our pilot program in 2024 with Franklin County Office on Aging. And so for our senior community, we know that there's an epidemic of isolation and loneliness that exists in America. The U.S. government put out a six-pillar program to help to attack that epidemic. And that sixth pillar is cultivating a culture of connectivity. So we decided, let's tap into this older age group. We know that more than 50% of adults in America identify as lonely. And so we said, how can we help with that connection? And gaming was the ideal way to do that.
Now, are they playing games that I would know? Is it like a game that, you know, we have in our house, or is it a specialty game?
It varies, actually. I am 47. I'm not quite at that level. But when we say our, you know, I think of Pac-Man and Donkey Kong, Tetris. We have our seniors playing everything. We have them first learning on a gaming PC. So they actually come to Game Arena, which is the number one game arena in the country. And it is literally right here on High Street, just south of campus. So they come to Game Arena every Tuesday. They are there now. They're listening. So shout out to our senior gamers at Game Arena. And so there they are on gaming PCs. We also have racing sims, like a simulated racing with the steering wheel and the pedal that you can attach to a desk. We also have the big rigs, but it's hard to get in and out. We have VR headsets. We have Nintendo Switch. So we have made sure that we have given them the exposure to every piece of technology that we can use from a gaming and esports perspective, as well as their mobile phone and tablet.
Now, Shonda, I heard you tell a story. I was at the Columbus Metropolitan Club. You were speaking. You were telling a story about seniors who just missed being able to do something because they couldn't do it anymore. But now this gave them the opportunity. Can you tell one of those stories?
Yes. I love lived experiences because they just bring me joy. So from what I understand, there were seniors who, you know, may have been an avid golfer and lost his physical ability to continue, you know, in that golfing journey, and was able to reconnect with that love of golfing through this e-gaming initiative. And when you think about just that and how simple that is, like, that made a world of a difference in that particular senior's life to be able to connect back to something that he thought he had to give up, but now he's able to engage in what he loves in a different way.
And I could see, Dr. Moore, another example being driving. I mean, taking away the car keys is a big thing in a lot of seniors' lives. A lot of children don't know when to do it. But you could still drive and have some fun on Mario Kart, right?
They have a need for speed. Yeah. And so being able to introduce the sim racing. But we also have introduced STEM curriculum for our seniors through sim racing. So making sure we're tying in some education and awareness always in our program.
Okay, so let's talk about teaching them how to do this. You know, there's always the idea of the technological barrier, you know, having trouble working smartphones or iPads, that kind of thing. So it's a lot of, I'm assuming it's a lot of hands-on learning. You have to, you know, before you can send them home to play with their own Switch. Yeah.
Yes, so we are very grateful to partner with Game Arena and Esports Foundry, who are our partners in our Level Up Land program that do more of the technical piece. I am not a gamer. I am very steeped in this industry, but I do not game. But being able to have this kind of coalition of the technical skill along with our company to be able to do the programming, adding in the health and wellness layers to what we do, they are learning as they go. And it's just very great to be able to see the beginning of this program, which we started in August of last year through December. And at the very beginning, a lot of them have never used a keyboard or a mouse, which is why we wanted to get them on a gaming PC, because then that then enables them to learn to type and do things. We have 100-plus-year-olds. We have 96 and 94 that come every week, but the bulk is between 60 and 80 years of age. So we teach them that technology. And then it's carryover for homes. When we were in December on our last day of our program, we did nothing. They were able to get in, get log on, get on the computer. Some had never used like a pen on a tablet. So to be able to see this transition of how they're able to use technology that then translates to home. And we also have gaming laptops that we do in the community and other ways that we engage while they're not at the game arena.
This is Tech Tuesday from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. That's Dr. Melita Moore, a board-certified physician, and her company is Levels Unlocked, which promotes and elevates women and people of color, and a program Level Up Land was created. And also with us is Shonda Wingo, director of the Franklin County Office on Aging. Shonda, can you talk a little bit about the connection to younger people in the seniors' lives through the video games?
Oh, yes. So one of the other things that we've been really working on is the intergenerational piece. When you live in a community where 38 people are turning 60 a day, it's inevitable to put generations into boxes. We have the sandwich generation on the rise. I mean, even in my own household, it's my mother, my children, and myself. And so when you think about ways to bring those generations together, this is a really easy, low-hanging fruit opportunity to allow our older generations and our younger generations to get together. So one of our other initiatives that we did last year and the year before is we would bring our seniors and various youth groups together just for that connectivity. And every single time, what you would find is seniors would take to the young people, adopt them, and then our young people would say, I feel like I have a new nanny or a new grandma or a new grandpa. And just being able to have them understand that even though there is a difference in their ages, there's that commonality of just being a human, and they're able to relate on that level more often than not.
Dr. Moore, what are you finding with the connection between the seniors and working with young people on this?
So we knew that this was a great initiative through Franklin County Office on Aging, this intergenerational connection. And so we created a kinship program to where we have any youth, you don't have to be kin, but any youth to come and engage and almost adopt a senior. And so we have a hybrid program that we did, which was online and in person for kinship. And so we're very grateful to say that over that 5-month period of doing this project with Franklin County Office on Aging, we engaged over 900 seniors, but we also engaged over 60 people under the age of 60, which are really the youth. And we did a program last summer with Franklin County Job and Family Services doing youth programming. A lot of those youth from that program volunteered to be part of our Level Up Land for our senior community. So that kinship, you know, just creating that connectedness, helping with maybe some of the discourse in a household. Grandma might not know why you're on the computer playing this game, but now she's able to engage in a different way and also have fun with you. So the kinship program was very successful for our pilot program.
I can see this also being like, instead of the senior saying, oh, you're always with that video game, but now they're into it too.
They're in it.
Yeah. So what you mentioned where they get together every Tuesday, is this a growing program, a continuing program? If someone's listening right now and they want to send their grandma down, what has to happen?
Yeah, this is part of a continuing program. So we are still doing our every Tuesday at Game Arena, which is at 1556 North High Street from 10 to 1. And that is a program that we will continue to do throughout the year. While we are waiting on additional funding sources, we want to make sure that we did not leave our seniors hanging. And so we wanted to make sure we were able to have kind of this stopgap while we're waiting on hearing about grant opportunities and some other ways to sustain our program. But with that, we are hoping to hear soon, and we will be back into building out our programming for the rest of the year, which consists of online, in-person, and hybrid, as well as our community outreach program, which was really, I think, important, especially for those seniors who may not be able to come to us, or for some of the seniors who are aging in place within their senior living facility. We have 20 gaming laptops that we take to the community. We engaged over 35 different locations in our 3 months of doing that part of the program last year. So very excited to continue this, but we will absolutely be at Game Arena every Tuesday from 10 to 1. The first Tuesday of the month is a great time to come and kind of see what's happening. We have complimentary lunch. We have great coffee and pastries, but it's also just that part to be socially connected in a very different place that you may not have ever gone before. Whether it's rain or shine, sleet, snow, our seniors show up, and we want to make sure that we're showing up for them.
And what about getting gaming systems into people's houses, or I guess you said like living facilities, that kind of thing? I'm sure not everyone can afford it, right? But some people probably have their own.
Yeah. Yes, well, for the adult population in America, most games are played on a smartphone. And so we're making sure we're engaging our seniors with games on the smartphone. We do chess.com. Chess.com has over 200 million users worldwide, but we have a program specifically for our Level Up Land seniors. So you have to have a smartphone, which almost everyone has, that can play some basic games. And in this age group, word games, puzzle games, card games are really popular, but we show them a way to then be connected through those types of games that they enjoy, as well as giving them a different experience to other types of games that they haven't been introduced to.
And you mentioned this is a pilot program. So Franklin County, are you hoping to grow it?
Absolutely.
Oh, well,
we are.
You're
planning
not going to say no.
We are in our growth strategy right now. We are certainly planning for Franklin County, again, with support from Franklin County Office on Aging, as well as other members in the community. We are looking to grow this nationwide. What we see across the world, I have that opportunity to see a global perspective, and we have seen other countries that are doing this, but we haven't seen a program like this in the United States, not to our knowledge. So this is the first of its kind. It was a very successful pilot. We have wrapped some research around it with Dr. Sarah Anderson at The Ohio State University, as well as my academic home at University of California, Davis. And so our plan is for growth within Franklin County, all of Ohio, and then take our program national.
And Shauna, can you talk a little bit about the loneliness piece? How have you seen people blossom from just learning this new skill?
Oh, boy. One senior, I'll quote the great Pam Shields. She said, "We're back in the game."
There you go.
And that's a very simplistic way to really think about it. You know, a lot of our seniors don't get regular visits from their family members or regular phone calls, or have outlived most of their family or didn't have much family to begin with. And so this is just a really great opportunity for seniors to find a new sense of family or a new sense of community. And they're loving it. They're loving it.
And there's lots of different technology out there for seniors. You know, there's wearable devices to help, you know, if they need alerts or anything like that. There's AI out there. I even saw Ohio State is doing some research with little robot dogs for companionship. So what would you say just people need to embrace the technology, not be afraid of it?
Yes. So that's one of the great things that this program does. It does start with the education of how to just engage with any technology, how to recognize scams, how to, you know, not click on a harmful link, and how to uplift things. One thing I will say, you know, the Office on Aging does also have adult protective services under our purview. Mm-hmm. And so we also want to make sure that our seniors and our family members know that as those challenges arise, that there is additional resources to make sure that our seniors are safe. But they do a great job of making sure that, you know, they know the safety precautions, but they also teach them AI and how to use AI effectively, both, you know, in gaming, but also in just practical day-to-day activity.
So this is a pilot program, I'm sure. Are there any favorite components that you're going to expand on that you have seen where you're like, yes, we really need to lean into this? Because you could go so many different ways with this between... You mentioned, you know, just even a chess game on the phone to, you know, a driving simulator. Like, there's so many different aspects. So which ones are you going to lean into more?
For us, our program always goes around digital equity, digital literacy, and digital health. So we definitely want to lean a little bit more into the health perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about healthy digital lifestyles with our Healthy Gamer Foundation and teaching kind of some of the benefits of gaming with hand-eye coordination, you know, making sure your memory is a little bit sharper, this visual spatial awareness. When you have better visual spatial awareness, you have a decreased risk for falls. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about kind of all of these things that people may not consider with vision health and hearing health that all tie into gaming, that's a big piece of what we're doing. We certainly want to be able to see our community outreach program grow, to be able to purchase more gaming laptops, to go to more centers and organizations within the community, because we know not everyone can come to this awesome game arena. Mm-hmm. We have a future to build a new kind of game arena that's for a digital community center that we can do all of our programming in. And then we also want to expand really on the online portion of our program. Hmm. In piloting that, we were kind of learning some nuances there, and those were some lessons learned on how seniors like to engage, when they like to engage. And so being able to do that, but having more resources, being able to hire more staff. Like I said, this was a pilot, uber successful, and now we're just ready to level up and to be able to expand the program.
I see what you did there. Level up. Well, I want to thank you for your time. Thanks for coming in to talk about this. That was Dr. Melina Moore, a board-certified physician, and her company, Levels Unlocked, promotes and elevates women and people of color, and she has the program Level Up Land that we were talking about. Thanks for being here, Dr. Moore.
Thank you.
And we also heard from Shonda Wingo, the director of the Franklin County Office on Aging. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And this is Tech Tuesday on 89.7 NPR News. Coming up, we're going to talk about how AI can help us learn more about what animals are feeling. That's when Tech Tuesday on All Sides continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich, and this is Tech Tuesday. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is thinking or feeling? Well, soon, with the help of AI analysis, you may be able to do that. Scientists around the world are working together to train an AI model to track minor facial changes in animals that can indicate what they might be feeling. Joining us now is an international science writer, Krista Lestay-Lesser, who wrote about the topic for science.org. Welcome to All Sides.
Hi, Amy.
Thanks for being here. So you start your piece by describing some very hungry pigs. You have some great photos of them, too. They are the unsuspecting beta testers of the system that has a cute name called IntelliPig. Can you tell us what that is and how it works?
Yeah, sure. So it's a scientist at the University of the West of England, Bristol, and at Scotland's Royal College who came up with this idea that they wanted to be able to at first identify just pigs. Because, you know, these pigs, they all look alike, but they're unique individuals. And you can tag them in their ears or put collars on them or something like that. But what's better for their welfare is just to have a snapshot of them. And so they realized that their computers were able to distinguish these pigs from each other with an amazing accuracy rate of 97%, which is really incredible. When you look at pigs, they look so much alike, but not to the computer. So they realized they could go a step further with this. And they say, wait a minute, if it's able to detect this, it could probably also detect differences in the facial expressions that could have certain meanings. And that could make for a better life for the animal. So they started working with that. They got machine engineers together with what they call it, I think vision engineers, with people who specialize in understanding animal behavior. And they teamed up to say, okay, now I want to show a picture to the machine of a pig that I know is in a happy situation and one that maybe is feeling stressed. And I want the machine to be able to find the differences in the facial expressions. And by doing that again and again, the machine was able to actually learn how to detect these differences in the facial expressions. And therefore can later say, this pig maybe didn't know it's just in a stressful situation, but it's stressed. So it's a really useful tool.
Yeah. So in the example you gave, if the pig has a special diet, it can scan its face and give it the food that it needs, right? Because this pig needs this particular type of food or that kind of thing. So it can know which pig is which, but then it can also recognize signs of pain and distress. So I would think that a pig's face can be a little harder to read than maybe other types of animals. So what did you learn about knowing whether an animal is in pain by their facial expression, how important that is to the farmer or the people who care for the animal?
Yeah, well, obviously, you know, we don't want any animals to feel any kind of pain. We want them to live, you know, a good life. Even if they're, you know, they're meat animals in the meat industry, we still want them to live a good life. And so the idea is to ensure that they don't have any pain. And animals are, you know, many of these are prey animals. They have learned through, you know, or they've evolved to hide their pain, hide their feelings. Because obviously, if you are a pig out there in the wild, and you're looking like you're not feeling well, then that makes you a greater target for the wolf. So they've learned to be very subtle. So a lot of times they, you know, farmers just don't see it. They might know their pigs pretty well, but the pigs might be hiding it, but they're not going to hide it if they don't know that anybody's looking at them. Mm-hmm. And so if you've got a little camera hidden in their stall, then the camera picks it up and is able to recognize the differences in the facial expressions that can be so subtle that even really good humans can't pick it up. And tell you that this animal is in pain, and so you need to have it investigated by a veterinarian. Maybe you need to give it some medication. Then you can also the next day follow up, and the next day after that follow up, see is it getting worse, is it getting better, and do I need to make some adjustments in the medication, or do I need to have the vet out again? And so each species has a different kind of facial expression. You said that the pigs might be hard to read. Honestly, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think all of them are kind of hard to read because what's tricky is a lot of times what we think is a facial expression of a certain kind of emotion isn't. You know, I think a common example is like, you know, dogs showing their teeth or monkeys showing their teeth, and people assuming that it's a smile, but it's not. It's a sign of aggression, you know. Mm. So a lot of times we can be kind of anthropomorphic and just assume that because we do something that you know, we understand that the animal, what kind of facial expression the animal is making and what that represents, but we don't always know. And so it's up to we're kind of help, getting helped by computers now to understand what those differences are that we can't see ourselves.
Now, some people who have a pet where they're not quite sure what's wrong with it, might take them to a veterinarian, but then you also this AI technology is another step in the process. So even a veterinarian might not know exactly what the facial expression means, but maybe they could scan the face and get a better idea. Is it kind of a, is it just a new level of a way to understand animals?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think it's just such a fascinating tool, that we can use. It's a tool within a whole toolbox, of things that we have. And, the facial expression is important, but of course you also have to look at, how is the ant has the animal been eating correctly over the next few days? Obviously any cat that or dog that refuses the meal, you already know there's probably something wrong. So this is just something that adds to it. But what's really nice is that it can kind of catch some of the really earlier signs before things get too bad, so that the animal doesn't even want to eat anymore. You maybe you just get a hunch, just as you're a little bit suspicious that maybe this animal isn't feeling well, maybe your cat isn't in a great mood today or something, or something's wrong. There's an app that's soon to be released where you can just scan the cat's face, and you get you scan for like 30 seconds of a video, and then it immediately gives you, kind of like in ChatGPT, it just says, your cat is, feeling moderate pain today. And maybe you should, have it evaluated or check, an hour later and see how things are progressing.
Okay, that the cat app that you just mentioned, did you say that that's not available yet, but is it something that's in the works?
It is really on the brink of being available. It should be any day now.
Okay. Do you know if that's something that people would pay for a subscription to, or is it going to be like a free app where you can like decode your cat?
I really don't know. I'm sorry. I didn't ask the researchers about that. But
I was just curious
I
because some AI technology is free and some of it we're paying for and it's evolving and changing every day.
Well, there is a free app to scan horses to for their for pain recognition. That's been out for a while so at the University of Utrecht in the Netherlands. So that can just be downloaded and people can try it for their horses.
Yes, your article went into some detail about horses. All
Yeah.
of the different points on the face that the app takes into consideration, worry wrinkles, what it does with its ears. Can you talk a little bit about, just decoding a horse's face?
Oh gosh. Well, horses are incredibly have incredibly complex facial expressions. They're one of those prey animals that I was talking about earlier, but they also live in herds, and so they have evolved a really spectacular way of being able to communicate with each other through incredibly subtle signs, because the idea is they want to be able to have communication with each other without attracting the attention of predators. So that means that their muscles have gotten really good, their facial muscles have gotten really good at just these really, really slight differences. We can pick up on that now. Already scientists were doing it, studying horses that had been castrated or had come into the hospital for some other kind of a pain, sometimes a really bad stomach ache. And they know that these animals are in pain. There's just no doubt about it. They know that, given the pathology that they have. So they were able to already start taking little notes, and saying, oh, I noticed that, the horse's ear kind of goes sideways a little bit, and he starts to create a kind of a triangular shape with his eyes where he's got these worry wrinkles that you were mentioning. He seems to tighten up his lip a little bit more. So they're picking up on these signs that the horse is in pain. A lot of times the position of the neck as well can indicate, if it's quite low, then that could indicate some, differences in comfort. So we already knew that as humans, being able to do this kind of read, and the scientists were able to do it. But man, is it a slow process. I mean, if you want to find out if your horse is sick, or the veterinarians want to see if they're giving enough pain medication, they might have to sit there for a while with a notepad and mark down all these different things that they see, and then go back and do it again later. And nobody has time for that. So if you have a way to do it with just a constant video, just watching the horses, picking up on these signs that the human researchers had already picked up on and told the machine, hey, by the way, if you notice that the horse is starting to have these worry wrinkles, send me an alert. And that's what it can do now.
We are talking with international science writer Krista Lestay-Lesser, who wrote about AI, using AI recognition to decode animals' faces for science.org. So let's go back to cats for a minute. The work on the cats found out that cats have a lot of facial expressions. There's hundreds of different facial expressions, and that may seem like, you know, cats are just known for being like, about a lot of things. So, right. So a lot of people just feel like, oh, my cat's fine. But what do you think that, you know, a cat owner can learn about their cat by, you know, being able to scan their face?
Well, at the moment, you know, we're just right about, you know, looking at pain. That's kind of where we are right now. And we're just scratching the surface of trying to figure out other kinds of emotions. Like, and mainly that's just dividing between good versus bad emotions. We're trying to get closer down, you know, to be able to say, you know, happiness, fear, anger, disgust, you know, excitement. We want to get there, but we're not quite there yet. But that is the idea. And given the fact that they do have 276 different facial expressions, it's certainly not they are very expressive animals, then there is a lot that we can learn by trying to look at this. But the problem is that we can't jump the gun. You know, you can't just say, oh, I think that, you know, when they raise their eyebrow, you know, they don't really have an eyebrow, but they raise what looks like an eyebrow, and, you know, pucker up their nose or something like that, then this means, you know, this means that they're feeling this way or that. We don't know that because you can't ask the cat. So we have a long way to go before we get there, but we are on the right path to figuring out little by little, teasing through all of the different kinds of emotions that cats can have and trying to match them with the facial expressions that we know that they're capable of.
Is it hard to teach AI about different expressions? I'm thinking of like dogs, because there's so many different dog breeds and so many different dog faces. I can imagine that it would take a lot of time to train AI to read every type of dog's face.
Yeah, and yeah, you've really hit the nail on the head there. That's exactly right. It's a lot easier to train pigs, horses, and cats. But when it comes to dogs, like you said, I mean, so many different breeds. Some have long noses, some have short noses, some have long floppy ears, some have short cropped ears, you know, and then some have hair all in front of their eyes, and you can't see the eyes as well. So this is quite the challenge, actually. And the idea that AI, AI often does is it uses landmarks, not all the time, but landmarks are these little dots that are on the faces that the computer learns that these are the specific places we need to be looking for and measuring the distances between those dots. And it's hard to find where to put the dots on a dog whose eyes are not visible. And it's also hard for the AI to know, wait a minute, the ear on the last dog was floppy and down. Now these are pointed up here. I can't find the ear. So it's been a bit of a challenge, but George Martville at the University of Haifa is doing an amazing job working through this particular challenge with the dogs. But to answer your question more generally, it still takes thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of images to train these AI to be able to recognize the where to place landmarks, or just how to recognize a happy dog versus an unhappy dog, or a painful cat versus a pain-free cat. It's a lot of work because the machine needs a whole lot of experience. It's kind of like with ChatGPT. It took half of the library of the University of Cambridge to be able to train ChatGPT. So we're looking at something similar with animals' faces.
Yeah, I mean, I can see, you know, computers are fast. So if you import a million photos of one breed of dog, I'm sure it can learn it quickly, but it's just a matter of like collecting all those photos and then teaching it to interpret it, right?
Well, and also not only that, but also knowing the status of that particular animal. So you can go through the internet and you can probably easily find a million photos of cat faces, but would you be able to find cat faces where you know what the situation was for that cat? You can't train the AI if you can't also say, by the way, I know that for sure that this cat was having a very happy day, or, you know, and people put the pictures of their cats up, but, you know, Are they saying what the cat was doing at that particular moment? We don't always know.
See, now I understand better why you're saying they're starting with pain, because then that is a particular thing. It's not whether it's happy or sad or indifferent, but the pain, and then they can work toward ways of helping the animal. So that makes sense that they're starting in that aspect.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to get what they call the ground truth on pain. You know, most of the time if an animal is in pain or not, because there are other signs that, show you that obviously that the animal is feeling pain.
Do you think in the future we're going to see like every pig farmer is going to have their pig faces be scanned?
Maybe. I mean, we're talking about how far into the future, right? I
Yeah.
mean, I think these smart farms are going to be picking up little by little, and I think that people are going to find that they're very useful. It's easier for the farmer, and it's easier for it's better for the animal welfare as well. So it can improve production. The team there in Bristol is currently working on picking up signs in facial expressions that could suggest that the pigs are more or less susceptible to certain kinds of illnesses. So they can already plan in advance and be proactive with that. So
That was international science writer Krista Lestay-Lesser, who wrote about AI and animal expressions for science.com. Thank you so much for joining us to talk about this today.
thanks, Amy.
And this has been Tech Tuesday from All Sides with Amy Jurevich. This is 89.7 NPR News.